That's why I ask for the impeachment of President Bolsonaro. But it's really, really very unlikely that Bolsonaro will get impeached. I think he won't get reelected, but he won't get impeached.
And soon after calling for the impeachment of the president, you fled the country. So was that correlation or causation?
It's a show about medicine.
It's free, so you can't complain.
The guy you just heard is Dr. Christopher Labos.
And the other guy is Jonathan Jarry. I'm a doctor, but he's not.
Sorry that I did biomedical research instead, jeez.
And we're gonna look at the evidence behind medical topics, and the show is
called... Wait, no, I wanna say it.
I wanna say it.
I came up with it. It's the body of... It's the body of evidence.
You totally stole that from Madonna.
We are joined by Natalia Pasternak, PhD, who is a Brazilian science communicator and the president of, and I hope I'm saying this correctly, Instituto Questão de Ciência, also known as the Question of Science Institute. She holds a PhD in microbiology from the University of São Paulo and completed postdoctoral studies in the molecular genetics of bacteria. Her accomplishments are many. She was a director of Pint of Science in Brazil from 2015 to 2019, the co-organizer of the Aspen Global Congress on Scientific Thinking and Action, a fellow of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, and the publisher of Brazil's first magazine on critical thinking. And I had the chance to meet Natalia in Vegas a few years ago, and now you are joining us from New York City. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jonathan, and thank you, Chris, for having me on the show.
Can you tell us briefly what you're doing in New York City?
Yes, I'm here as a visiting scholar at Columbia University, and I'm researching science communication, which is great because it's not the kind of research that you usually see in academia. And we are trying to bring science communication to policymakers and not just to the average science background student. So it's not just about teaching people how to do science communication theories, but it's more about practical, the use of science for policymaking, the use of scientific evidence, and how much science you really need to understand if you are going to work as a policymaker or international relations or as a diplomat. So it's a very different approach, and I'm very happy to do it because I think the pandemic really showed how important that is.
Indeed, yeah. So we wanted to talk to you about Brazil's management of the pandemic and about this intersection of politics and science in the middle of a public health crisis. But can you first give us sort of a brief overview of the healthcare system that you have in Brazil? Because you have both a public and a private healthcare system, correct?
Yeah, that's it. We have a very robust public healthcare system that really caters to over 200 million people. And we are very proud of our public healthcare system, but of course, it's not perfect. It is overwhelmed, it is underpaid, has really... This year, the budget has been really cut. So it faces a lot of difficulties, but still, it's a very good service. And it's a service that most of the population gets as the only medical service that they have access to. For those who prefer not to stay in lines waiting for exams or to get an x-ray or for a mammogram that might put you in line for like 2 months in the public system. So for those who can afford it, Brazil offers a lot of private healthcare plans, and they vary a lot in sizes and prices, but usually those who can afford it will go for a private healthcare just because it's more comfortable and you don't have to wait long lines. But in terms of quality, they are very similar. Usually the public one is better, but there are some private ones that are really good as well. So we have a balance. So most of the population really uses the public healthcare system, but of course the wealthiest part of the population uses private ones.
If you had to summarize the management of the COVID-19 pandemic by the country of Brazil, how would you put it?
I would say it was a total mess. Really, I think it's the only way to summarize it because, well, let's think about it. We had four health ministers during the pandemic.
Wow.
Yeah, because Bolsonaro has the habit of firing people that he doesn't like or who don't agree with him. Mm-hmm. We had the most denialist president in the history of Brazil. I mean, we had bad governments before. We certainly had bad presidents before, but we never had a president who was so clearly anti-science and anti-education as Bolsonaro. So we had the worst government in the worst time in history. It was the worst combination that we could get because it was the worst kind of leadership that we could get in the worst health crisis that we faced. So it was a mess. Bolsonaro really didn't care about the pandemic. He denied many aspects of the pandemic. First, he denied the pandemic itself, saying that it was just a minor flu. It was not serious. Then he denied the need for vaccines. So he didn't purchase vaccines in time. We took a long time to really get vaccination going in Brazil. And we have one of the world's best vaccination program. So if we had vaccines back in December 2020, we would be fully vaccinated by now. I mean, the whole population, because we know how to vaccinate. We are prepared to do that in Brazil. But we didn't have vaccines because Bolsonaro didn't think it was important enough to get vaccines in advance and make bilateral agreements with the companies. So we ended up with no vaccines in Brazil. If it weren't for the government of São Paulo, I don't think we would be vaccinating right now because he put a lot of political pressure on the government when he made the agreement to purchase Sinovac from China. And that's what really got things going. Then after denying the need for vaccines, Bolsonaro denied scientific evidence itself and promoted miracle cures for COVID, like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. We have it all in Brazil. We have what it's called a COVID kit, the early treatment COVID kit, which has all these useless medications such as hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, vitamin D, what else? Nitroxoxanide, proxalutamide. There's lots of useless medications that are either unproven or disproved for COVID-19. And the government endorses that as an actual healthcare plan. So it's actually a national guideline to use this COVID kit. And so Bolsonaro has been denying every aspect of the pandemic. And he also denied the need for social isolation. And he told people to go out on the streets and stop whining, because we are all going to die one day. So this is my president. It's a mess, really. We had no guidelines. We had no national guidelines for the pandemic. It was really every man for himself. Every state had to issue their own guidelines, every city. So you can imagine mayors and state governors doing everything the way that they imagine would be the best, with no federal regulations, no federal guidelines.
It's interesting because I don't think you could describe any Canadian province as anti-science, but there were some that did better than others, and the ones that tended not to do so well were usually because they were more right-wing governments, more populist governments, and really, I mean, they took COVID seriously, but they also wanted to be seen as pro-economy and pro-individual rights, and that's sort of what led them down the wrong path, if you will. Is that what happened in Brazil, or was it a very different motivation that led the president down the path that you just described?
It's very similar. And we also had the same correlation in Brazil. There was a survey that examined cities in Brazil that voted mostly for Bolsonaro. And these cities had the worst COVID outcome in hospitalizations and death because people wouldn't engage in mask wearing and social isolation. opposition because they were very pro-government and pro-Bolsonaro. And the excuse was the same, that they were actually pro-economy, and they didn't take COVID seriously. They really didn't. They endorsed Bolsonaro's claim that it was just a minor flu.
So you were mentioning this COVID kit with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and vitamin supplements. Do you have any inkling why Bolsonaro latched onto those, you know, drugs and those supplements in particular, like hydroxychloroquine? Was he convinced by the study coming out of France at the time? Like, what was the rationale for jumping onto those molecules in particular?
Yeah, it's difficult for me to think as Bolsonaro as rational, but I could try to guess that he was really going after Trump, because he wants to be just like Trump when he grows up. He's the tropical Trump. And when Trump embraced hydroxychloroquine, Bolsonaro said, oh, so if Trump is saying that this is good, so I want it too. And it was really after Trump endorsed hydroxychloroquine that Bolsonaro became in love with it. But even though Trump did eventually give up on hydroxychloroquine, he didn't use it when he got COVID. Mm-hmm. Bolsonaro was still in love with the drug and still is up to this day. I mean, just in August right now, when he gave his speech at the UN, he talked about hydroxychloroquine in the United Nations. Wow. And he said that he didn't know why the rest of the world wasn't using this miracle drug, and look how well Brazil is doing because we use hydroxychloroquine. So the guy is completely either detached from reality or just a liar. I don't know. I don't know what's in his mind, but I don't know his motivation, but we could guess that by providing these miracle drugs to the population, he's saying, okay, so there's nothing to fear. You don't need vaccines. You don't need masks. You don't need social isolation, because he is the miracle cure. So let's get out, and let's get back to work, and let's get the economy going, because if you get COVID, here's the cure.
It's really distressing that the president of a country is treating, you know, medical interventions like he's on Tinder, swiping left or swiping right, and now he just can't quit hydroxychloroquine. He's just madly in love with it. I mean, it's really disturbing. One of the private healthcare providers in Brazil, called Prevent Senior, was apparently forcing its doctors to prescribe the COVID kit. I mean, what is going on in your country's healthcare system that this is the outcome?
Yeah, well, that was a scandal, really. Oh, so Prevent Senior, and I know that in English, the name is horrible. They are not trying to prevent people from becoming seniors. Although
it's a Logan's Run spinoff.
Yeah, you could say that after you hear the story, maybe it makes sense, but
right.
it's a private healthcare plan that caters to senior citizens only. So this is what makes it even more cruel when you think about it, because these guys were really, really prescribing the COVID kit. And they were actually sending people home with the COVID kit instead of hospitalizing them, even when hospitalization was warranted. So they were not treating people, senior citizens. It's elderly people we're talking about. It's vulnerable people. And they were not getting proper treatment at the hospital. And they weren't being sent home with the COVID kit. So lots of people died because they didn't get proper treatment. And the hospital was broadcasting crazy, saying, oh, look at our hospitalization rates for COVID. They are the lowest in the whole country. And well,
of course.
Yeah, that's very easily accomplished if you don't treat people.
Wow.
So that's what, and they were investigated by the inquiry committee that was going on at the Senate, at the Brazilian Senate. It was implemented to investigate the responsibility of the president, really, by the management of the pandemic. And then eventually Prevent Senior's case was brought to their attention. So Prevent Senior was also investigated by the Senate Parliamentary Inquiry Committee. And then they found out that it was really, they were pushing doctors to prescribe the COVID kit as if it were a sales target. And so the doctors who prescribed the most were rewarded, and the doctors who refused to prescribe were afraid of losing their jobs. So, it was really an unheard of situation in Brazil. We never thought we would see something like that.
I'm curious, now that Pfizer and Merck have actual antiviral medications, has that changed the narrative? And did, because there have been a few medications to treat COVID, steroids. Did the introduction of medications, like proven medications, change the narrative? Or were people, or was the government very fixated on their COVID kit, the vitamin D, the hydroxychloroquine, the ivermectin combination?
They are less enthusiastic now about the COVID kit, the government, but I think that's a result of the inquiry, the parliamentary inquiry. And Prevent Senior is very quiet, of course, because now they've been investigated. So we don't know their views about the new drugs. But of course, the new drugs haven't been yet approved by our regulatory agency. I don't know if they have issued their reports to our regulatory agency here in Brazil. So I didn't really follow up on that. But of course, the hospital itself, the private healthcare, is very quiet right now.
Can you tell us about this app called I don't know if it's Tratikov or Tratikov, and the prescriptions that it would suggest?
Yeah, this was an app that was also developed by the same group of people that were pushing the COVID kit, but more specifically, it was about proxalutamide, which is it's a hormone blocker that had some biological plausibility to it, but really didn't prove to work. And this group who wanted to test proxalutamide as a COVID medication, they had no ethical clearance from the medical ethical board, and they did the experiments anyway. So that was another scandal in Brazil. And they didn't, so the many patients who were enrolled, they were not really enrolled in the clinical trial because they had no idea they were participating in the clinical trial. They were just prescribed this medication at the hospital, and it's not an authorized medication in Brazil. It was authorized for clinical trial use only, and the patients didn't know, their families didn't know, so it was all illegal, and it happened anyway.
Wow. So you mentioned proxalutamide. Chris, I mean, this, I don't remember ever hearing about this in North America as a potential treatment for COVID.
No, me neither, to be quite honest with you. There's been a lot of putative treatments suggested here and there, but I don't think it ever gained widespread purchase here, certainly not here in Canada. And even in the U.S., where, interestingly enough, people were much more aggressive in treating COVID. Like in Canada, you came in, you got steroids, and really that's the only thing we used early on because that was the only real proven effective treatment. In the U.S., they did a lot of other stuff. Like they were giving a lot of Tosi, a lot of other medications that had some evidence but not great evidence because the situation was just so much worse in the U.S. that there was very much this philosophy of throw everything in the kitchen sink at the patients so that they don't die. But even that, I don't really remember that getting widespread use.
I'm on Wikipedia right now, which says that apparently proxalutamide was approved in Paraguay for the treatment of COVID-19 in July 2021, but has not been approved at this time in other countries. It's a non-steroidal anti-androgen. Interesting. I wanted to ask you, Natalia, what do you know about, you know, because we've been talking about sort of the top-down approach, what the governments were doing, the healthcare system, but how much critical thinking and scientific literacy are being taught in Brazilian medical schools? Do you have an idea?
Well, if we look at the results, we would say not much. It's difficult. We have a lot of medical schools, so some are better than the others. But I think we can say from what we observe in medical prescriptions and the way the doctors behave during the pandemic, that we have a great number of doctors who really have no idea how science works. And otherwise, they wouldn't be prescribing these medications. I mean, I refuse to believe that all doctors in Brazil who prescribe hydroxychloroquine are doing that for political reasons. They probably believe that they are doing the best for their patients. And if they believe that, then they don't understand scientific method. So something is really wrong with their education, with medical education in Brazil. It's not just about medical schools, it's about nursing schools and public health schools, so veterinary schools. I think we really need to teach critical thinking for our young students in medical and health professions, because otherwise they will become very vulnerable to misinformation, just like the rest of the population. And we have to remember that these are very practical careers. They are not scientific careers. So we really have to teach critical thinking. We really have to teach scientific method, because these people, they are medical doctors. They might have never had scientific experience in their lives. And it's okay, because it's a very practical profession. But if they don't come from science backgrounds, then the least we can do is teach scientific thinking. And I don't think we're doing that.
Yeah, so Natalia, I'm just about to blow Jonathan's mind, so sit back and get ready for this. So Jonathan, I don't know if you picked up on this, but Natalia said, you know, you don't need to have a scientific background to get into medical school. Did you realize that was true? Because you do not have to do an undergrad in science to get into a medical school. At
least I did know that. Yeah, you're not blowing my mind.
Oh, okay, I thought I was going to blow your mind there.
No,
it's true.
What typically happens in Quebec, because I mean, I haven't been to med school, but having been in the sciences, I was surrounded by students who really were desperate to get into med school. And so what happens is that some people like you, Chris, I believe, right after... There's a junior college between high school and university. So some people right after junior college get into med school. That was your case, Chris, right?
Yeah.
Other people, they don't get in. And so then they go and they do an undergrad program in some kind of biomedical science.
No, it doesn't have to be a biomedical science. That's my point. You can do an undergrad in something else, in a non-science thing, and still get into medical school.
Okay. And then some people would do a master's degree and reapply. And some people would do a PhD and reapply to med school. So, yeah.
In Brazil, it's different, you know. In Brazil, kids go directly from high school to medical school. So there's no junior college, there's no major in science background, nothing like that. They just go straight out from high school and they get into medical school.
But I think that's sort of the major issue. It's that if you think about it, if you don't have this basic science background before you get into medical school, you won't really understand how things work. You'll understand what the medications do, but you won't understand the mechanism of action. And that allows you to become fooled and to believe in things that are not true. So if somebody tells you hydroxychloroquine has antiviral effects, you'll say, okay, sure, why not? It's a medication, and you won't understand and you won't appreciate why people are saying things that are fundamentally untrue. So we have this ongoing argument in the medical system, how much basic science should be part of the medical school curriculum. And there's less of it now than there used to be. And I think the downside is that it makes it harder for physicians to become critical analyzers of the evidence, because you're allowed to, it allows you to believe things that are nonsensical. Like if somebody tells you this can change your DNA, you'll be like, okay, well, maybe that's possible, you know? So it's a real problem, because you're right. Medicine is not really a basic science field. It's a practice. You know, you are a practitioner and you learn stuff by algorithms and you know medicine, but medicine and science aren't always necessarily the same thing.
Yeah, I had medical doctors asking me, and I'm glad that they did ask at least, because I come from genetics and microbiology, so the RNA vaccines are really part of my ward. I still collaborate in a vaccine development lab, and some friends who are medical doctors, they actually asked me about the RNA vaccines, if it wasn't dangerous, and if the RNA from the vaccines wouldn't keep producing the spike protein sustain indefinitely in our bodies? And I said, no, of course not, because the RNA only lasts for like a week or two, and then it degrades. And they didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, I've done my fair share of RNA extractions and working with RNA in the lab, and we had a saying in the lab, which was that with RNA, you just look at it and it degrades, right? Yeah. So you have to be very, it's such a fragile molecule. And obviously the one that is in the vaccines has been, in a way, strengthened a little bit by using pseudouridine, I believe it is, to make it a little bit more stable, but it's still a very fragile molecule. Chris, you tried to blow my mind earlier and you failed spectacularly. Mm. Now I'm going to blow your mind. Mm-hmm. Did you know, Chris, that in Brazil, it's physicians, medical doctors, who practice homeopathy?
I did know that only because I heard you guys talking before we started recording. So I did catch that.
Natalia, I mean, I've spent a fair amount of time explaining what homeopathy is, but why don't you explain it to our listeners and explain why this is so at odds with the practice of actual medicine.
Yeah, well, homeopathy is based on two principles, the like cures like and the infinite dilutions. So it's a practice that was invented in Germany 200 years ago, and it was really invented based on these two principles. So if something gives you symptoms like the flu, like cures like, this something, if it is indefinitely diluted, should be able to heal you from the flu. That's the homeopathic principles. And people use it as medications, but people don't really realize, most people, when you tell them what homeopathy really is, they get surprised. They said, I thought it was about natural remedies or yep. herbal medicines or something like that. People don't usually know about the like cures like and dilutions. And so it's very important to explain where homeopathy comes from. And for homeopathy to work, the dilution principle states that the more you dilute a substance, the more potent it gets, which is contrary to every chemistry and physics law that we have today. So for homeopathy to work, everything that we know about chemistry and physics would have to be wrong. Just wrong. And we know for a fact that homeopathy doesn't work because it's been tested. It's been really tested. People yeah. have tested homeopathy in clinical trials over and over to see if there is something there that could warrant the use of homeopathy that's such a widespread use all over the world. But there's nothing there, really nothing there, because it's over-diluted. So there's not a single molecule of the original solution in actual homeopathy remedies. It's water. It's only water. So there is really nothing there. So there's no way that it could work. And we know for a fact that it doesn't work. But in Brazil, it is a medical specialty. So you graduate in medicine and then you can specialize in homeopathy. So it means you forget everything that you learned in medical school, because if you don't, there's no way that you can practice homeopathy unless you keep it in separate compartments in your brain. So you have one brain that you use as a medical doctor and the other part of the brain you use as a homeopath doctor, because it's incompatible to real medicine and to real pharmaceutical drugs that really undergo clinical trials and are proven to really be useful. Still, in my country, it is a medical specialty, which makes it really hard to fight, because every time that we go on TV or we write articles about homeopathy, there is always that person that says, oh, but it's approved by the Federal Board of Medicine. So who are you to say that it doesn't work? The Federal Board of Medicine is telling me that it does.
You're not even a doctor, Natalia.
Oh, yes, I'm not. You know that it's my favorite sentence, because I was really attacked after I spoke to the Senate during mm-hmm. the pandemic, during the COVID crisis. And so they would say, Natalia Pasternak is not a medical doctor. She never treated a single patient in her life. And hard as I tried, I couldn't see what's really wrong in that sentence. I mean, isn't it a good thing if I'm not a medical doctor? Would you rather I had treated patients in the past? I don't get it, really. What's wrong with that sentence?
Well, of course, what they mean is that you don't have the experiential knowledge and the training that a medical doctor has. And so how dare you criticize a decision that they're making, because apparently you have no knowledge that would be required to make that kind of assessment. But of course, you're a scientist and you have very useful knowledge in that particular way. We're going to get to the Senate, but first, I mean, you filed a complaint with the Supreme Court in May 2020 over the use of hydroxychloroquine for COVID. That's a pretty bold action. I think most scientists have never thought of filing a complaint with their Supreme Court. What led you to take this action?
Because the use of hydroxychloroquine became a national public health policy. And my institute, Question of Science, was created exactly to promote public policies that are based on scientific evidence and not on political ideology. So it made sense that with the institute, we would sue and try to remove this public policy from the Ministry of Health guidelines. But it eventually came down to nothing, really, because the ministers at the Supreme Court, the judges, we call them ministers here in Brazil if they are the Supreme Court, and they sat on it. It's never been judged up to now. And we filed it in I think it was May 2020, April 2020. So, yeah. It came out to nothing, really.
You had mentioned earlier this, because this did not stop you. There was a parliamentary inquiry committee that, as you were saying, was assessing the responsibility of the Brazilian federal government and how the pandemic was or wasn't handled in your country. Can you tell us a little bit about this, about your participation? Because it crescendos into you calling for the impeachment of President Bolsonaro. So how does that story go?
Yeah, so I was called, and this was huge for me and for my institute, because when we started the institute back in 2018, we wanted to promote science-based public policies, but we had no idea that in less than 3 years, we would end up in the Senate talking to legislators about science and about scientific method. So I was called as an expert in science communication. I am a microbiologist, but I was not called as a microbiologist. I was called as an expert in science communication and science-based public policies to explain to the senators about scientific method, how a clinical trial is run, what's the difference between correlation and causality. And that's what I did. So I had the privilege of explaining all these scientific concepts to the Senate to help the senators understand, for instance, why hydroxychloroquine doesn't work. And why, when people say, when they use anecdotal evidence and say, oh, but I took it, my father took it, my mother took it, and they felt better. It's a correlation. It's not causality. And to establish a causal effect, you need clinical trials. So I explain how clinical trials are run. I explain how preclinical trials in animals are run. And it was amazing, really. I don't know how much they really understood, but the whole country was watching on YouTube. So I really had the privilege of talking about scientific method to the senators and to millions of Brazilians who were watching. And the reason that I asked for the impeachment of President Bolsonaro is because I explained that the president was personally responsible for the excess or deaths that we had in Brazil. The amount of people that died in Brazil was excessive. Of course, the pandemic was going to eventually kill people in Brazil. We wouldn't escape from that, of course. But did we really have to lose over 600,000 people to COVID. And the reason we did was because Bolsonaro refused to take the pandemic seriously. He denied the severity of the pandemic. He denied the need for vaccination. He denied scientific evidence and promoted miracle cures. He denied the need for mask wearing and social isolation. And by denying all that, he lied to the population. So what I said at the Senate was that denialism is not about a naive ignorance. It's not about misinformation only. Denialism is a lie. And we cannot allow liars to be a president of a country, because they will hurt people. They will kill people. That's why I asked for the impeachment of President Bolsonaro. But it's really, really very unlikely that Bolsonaro will get impeached. I think he won't get reelected, but he won't get impeached.
And soon after calling for the impeachment of the president, you fled the country. So was that correlation or causation?
That was correlation, because I was already invited to come to Colombia, but there were visa issues because all the consulates were closed in Brazil because of the pandemic, all the American consulates. So it took me a while to get the visa documentation ready to come here. But the invitation to come to Colombia was made before the pandemic. So it was correlation.
She was sitting in front of the Senate, you know, clutching her plane ticket. As soon as she called for the impeachment, she ran out of the room, quick to the airport.
but you know that I left Brazil a month later. So It really looked like, many people ask me, well, did you get death threats? That's why you fled the country. And I said, no, I was just invited by Columbia University to come here to do research. That was all.
But you did get some pushback. I mean, you were mentioning this phrase of like, well, she's not even a doctor. I mean, what does she know? She's never treated a patient. But what kind of, can you describe some of the pushback that you got for this testimonial?
Oh, it's just stupid people on social media calling you names. It was never really more than that. I had some colleagues who actually got threats. I didn't. All I got was people calling me names on social media, and really, I couldn't care less.
Given this experience, do you think that elected officials should pass some sort of science literacy test either before they can take office or to confirm their eligibility when they run for office?
No, I don't think we should be testing people. I think we should be advising people. I think that it's necessary to train people to occupy offices such as scientific advisor too. We need scientific advisors to senators. We need scientific advisors to parliament members, to congress people. So I think we should be training people and implementing this new office called the scientific advisor. I know that in the U.S. there is a scientific advisor to the cabinet, to the president. We don't have it in Brazil. And I think that every parliament member should include one scientific advisor in their staff. So they are not, I don't think we should test people or make it mandatory for everyone to understand science, but there should be someone in the team who is well equipped to understand scientific evidence and to use it for policymaking.
We do have a very similar position in Quebec, in our province, the scientist in chief also advises politicians on scientific matters. You wrote a very bold and arresting conclusion to your April 2021 article for The Skeptic magazine in the UK, and we'll post a link in the show notes. And I wanted to read your conclusion so that it really sinks in with our listeners. I want to get your comment on that. You wrote, the result of all this is that the practice of medicine in Brazil is presently effectively unregulated. Malpractice would usually be reported to the medical boards, but if the federal board agrees with this nonsense and doesn't see any reason to regulate it, we have no choice but to appeal to the courts. This is dire, and it kind of reminds me of the Dominion Voting Systems defamation lawsuit against Sidney Powell, Rudy Giuliani, their Smartmatics defamation suit against Fox, Powell, Giuliani, and this idea that at the end of the day, the last resort that we may have against misinformation and propaganda and pseudoscience is to use the legal system and to sue. Do you think it's sad that it's come to that?
It is, certainly, because the Federal Board of Medicine, as I said, in Brazil, promotes pseudoscience. They endorse homeopathy and acupuncture as actual medical practices. So it comes as no surprise to me that they would endorse hydroxychloroquine. I mean, it's the same rational, if you can call that rational, but it's the same maybe irrational use of evidence. It's anecdotal evidence. It's a lack of understanding of how causal relations are tested in clinical trials. So if homeopathy works, why shouldn't hydroxychloroquine work? I think it's the same. They are just using anecdotal evidence. So I treated a lot of patients with hydroxychloroquine and they survived. I treated a lot of patients with homeopathy and they survived. So it's the same conclusion. And if the Federal Board of Medicine is embracing pseudoscience and it's not embracing rational and critical thinking and scientific thinking, who are we to turn to denounce that? So we have to go to court. But it's not as if the Supreme Court is interested in Brazil, because they weren't. We tried, we filed at the Supreme Court, and they just weren't interested. So in Brazil, it was up to the Senate to establish this parliamentary inquiry, but the Senate doesn't have judicial power, so they are just going to make recommendations that the president be investigated for crimes against humanity, but the one who has to investigate the president is the public ministry in Brazil. I don't really know how to translate that. I have to look for the legal term, but it's not up to the Senate. The Senate can just make the recommendation. So we just end up running around in circles and really nothing happens. I don't think that the president will be prosecuted. And I don't think that, well, as we say in Brazil, we have a very Brazilian saying that says, well, it's all gonna end in pizza. So
okay.
That's it. Nothing is going to happen.
Maybe Bolsonaro will be Trump's pick for vice president when Trump runs for office again very soon.
Well, that would be an evil scene to watch.
Chris, did you have any other questions on this topic before I move us to vaccination?
No, let's talk about the vaccination campaign in Brazil. I think it'd be interesting to hear how that's going in the, because it's easy to talk about miracle cures when you don't have a vaccine available. When you have the vaccine available, it becomes a much harder sell and people usually have to become a lot more creative in their sales pitch to try to convince people not to vaccinate, but to get, medication X.
Yeah, in Brazil, we have, about vaccination, we have a very beautiful situation that I like to call the Brazilian paradox. Brazilians are completely immune to vaccine misinformation.
Really?
Really. I mean, we have the president saying that vaccines are going to turn you into an alligator and give you AIDS. And nobody cares.
Really?
Nobody, even Bolsonaro supporters, everyone in Brazil is willing to get a COVID shot. And over 90% of the population is willing and is waiting to have their vaccinations completed. So Brazilians are very favorable to vaccination. We are immune to vaccine misinformation, but only to vaccine misinformation. We are not immune to other kinds of misinformation. So we are big on hydroxychloroquine and even other miracle treatments that had nothing to do with COVID. So all the pseudosciences that we were discussing, and even political misinformation, we are not immune to that. But vaccines are one thing that really, it is a paradox in Brazil. Nothing shakes Brazilian trust in vaccines. And this is probably a result of 50 years of good publicity campaigns of one of the world's best immunization programs. Our immunization program started in the military regime back in the 70s. And the military government wanted, of course, to, as a way to sidetrack people from all the torture that they were performing and all the political persecution, they wanted to give something to the people that showed that, look how we care for you, look how we take care of our people. So they invested really heavily in publicity campaigns for vaccination. And that involved bringing famous actors, celebrities, athletes, religious leaders, political leaders. So everyone got involved in vaccination campaigns back in the 70s. And it was 50 years of building trust in vaccination. So every Brazilian is used to vaccination. It's part of our daily lives. It's easy to get. It's free. It's available for everyone. So it became really interested in our culture. And it's really, it's hard to shake. So the president can yell all he wants and Brazilians don't care. You saw a lot of people when he said that vaccines were going to turn you into an alligator. Lots of people went to the health facilities to get their COVID shots dressed up as an alligator.
That's brilliant. That is very strange, because I can imagine in the United States, for example, if the military had played a very active role in pushing for vaccines in the 1970s, I think it'd be, we would have a flip as to who is anti-vaccine and who is pro-vaccine by political affiliation in the U.S. Is there no sort of, you know, historically pre-pandemic, is there no loud anti-vaccination movement in Brazil?
Oh, they are loud. We just don't listen to them.
Okay. Well, you have to export this part of Brazil culture, because we need this all over the world.
Yeah, but it took 50 years. And I think this is the take-home message, really. This is the important lesson. You don't build trust in science overnight. It takes time and it takes investment. Heavy investment. So the political campaigns, the publicitary campaigns for vaccinations that started in the 70s, they were huge. People invested a lot of money on that. And in the 80s, when we started the polio campaigns, the polio vaccination campaigns, they invented a cartoon called Joe Droplet. And Joe Droplet became really famous with the children. And so it was very engaging. All the kids loved Joe Droplet. They wanted to get their polio vaccine because they would see Joe Droplet at the health facilities and they would get a sticker of Joe Droplet. So it got very emotional. And this emotional attachment that builds trust and that uses empathy, this takes time. You don't do that overnight, and it requires a lot of effort and engaging different actors in the society, different stakeholders. And I think this is the take-home message. It requires an effort of the government to really build trust in science.
Were there no ripples in the late 90s, early 2000s of Andrew Wakefield's, you know, infamous fraudulent study linking the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine with a form of autism? Did you guys hear anything about that in Brazil? Did that have any kind of impact?
It was minor, really. It didn't hit Brazil the way that it hit the rest of the world. We knew about it. It made the news media, but it didn't impact vaccination rates. So we have an anti-vax movement in Brazil. They are loud in social media, but they don't get results yet. And the emphasis on yet, because we haven't been investing as heavily in publicity campaigns for vaccination for the past few years, especially after Bolsonaro was elected. And if we stop investing in vaccination programs and in vaccination publicity campaigns, I'm afraid that this beautiful vaccine trust that took 50 years to build could be easily destroyed. Because we know that people are vulnerable to misinformation. They are not reacting right now because we still have a strong trust in vaccination, but we can't guarantee that it lasts forever if there is no effort to maintain it.
So, Chris, if you're looking for a career change, Joe Droplet mascot in Brazil?
Well, I don't know. We've recently turned on Big Bird here, so...
Yes, that is true, yes. Yeah. That's true. Maybe mascot is not the way forward. As we wrap up, Natalia, can you tell us a little bit about your institute and the work that it does sort of day-to-day? You've mentioned it a few times, a Question of Science Institute, and why it was founded. What is it? Who is involved? What do you do?
Great. So we founded the Question of Science Institute in Brazil. And by the way, congratulations on saying it in Portuguese. It was really good. It's called in Portuguese Instituto Questão de Ciência. And we decided to start the institute because there was no one organizing science communication and the promotion of critical thinking and rational thinking in a professional way. There were lots of science communicators that were on YouTube trying to do a good job in their spare time with pocket money. And they are usually postdocs that really, they had a day job. And they were trying to contribute to science communication because they felt it was important, but they were not paid for that. They were not recognized for that. And we wanted to try to build something more professional that would really make science communication be recognized as a field in Brazil. And we wanted to do this kind of science communication that promotes rational and critical thinking. There were a lot of very good people promoting the beauty of science and trying to attract young children for scientific careers. This is not what we do. So we do skepticism and promotion of critical thinking. We try to explain the science that you need to make good decisions in your daily lives. Either as a citizen, so you have to decide if you're going to vaccinate your children or what kind of medication you want to get when you go to the drugstore, if you're going to buy a homeopathic drug or if you want one that works, or if you're going to the supermarket and you have to decide to buy organic, or if you're going to buy a genetically modified product, are you going to be afraid of those? So we try to explain the science that you need in your daily lives, either as a citizen or as a policymaker, because if you're a policymaker and you need to pass a regulation on the use of embryonic stem cells, for instance, and you have to understand at least the basic science behind it, so you can pass a good regulation about it. And this was the main motivation for establishing the institute, which is a non-profit. It's an NGO in Brazil. And we try to work with these two different arms, one speaking directly to the public. So we have a magazine, we do videos, we do seminars, we organize a lot of events that to talk directly to the public about science. And then we have the advocacy arm, where we try to engage parliament members and policymakers and members of the executive. So we write position papers, we write reports when they ask. We try to build this bridge between the academia and policymakers and society. And so far, we are very young. We are going to be 3 years old now in November. It's our third anniversary. But I'm proud to say that in 3 years, we have accomplished a lot. And I hope that we can contribute to a more rational Brazil in the future. It's probably not going to happen during Bolsonaro's government, because no one can be rational under Bolsonaro, but he's not going to be there forever. So I think there is hope.
Speaking of that, I had a big complicated question to end this conversation on. So if you had unlimited resources, right, beyond what your institute has, just unlimited resources, and you wanted to fix the problems that led to Brazil's mismanagement of the COVID-19 crisis, what would you do and what could you do to prevent a similar mismanagement from happening in the future?
Buy a puppy.
Well, yeah, that's a tough one, because I'm no politician and I was never trained for that. But as a science communicator, I think that, and I don't think this was a Brazilian problem alone. I know that we have to invest heavily in communication and transparency. And we have to learn as leaders, if I were one, I think, to really, we have to learn how to communicate uncertainty, because there are many, many things during the pandemic that we simply didn't know. And we have to be able to communicate uncertainty to the population in a very transparent and honest way. Because otherwise, if we don't communicate what we don't know about science, what we still don't know, but and communicate how we are investigating so that in the future we can have better answers for these questions, if we don't learn how to communicate this kind of uncertainty and what we don't know about science, people get suspicious. And they feel cheated because they say, oh, come on, you don't, these guys don't know anything. In the beginning, they said that we didn't need to wear masks. And now they're saying that we need to wear masks. So I don't trust them anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very important that we really learn how to communicate uncertainty and how we communicate things that we don't know. After all, science is much more about what we don't know, isn't it? It's much more about what we need to know and how we investigate that.
Yeah, as I like to say, science is about reducing our uncertainty of the world around us, right? It never reduces it to nothing.
Yes.
There's always some uncertainty left, but you want to reduce it. You want to become more certain than you were before. Well, Natalia Pasternak, this has been fascinating and so nice to have you on the show. Speaking of uncertainty, if people want to know where to find you and your work online, can you bring some certainty to this equation? Where can they go?
Thank you, Jonathan. Yes, so most of my work is in Portuguese, but we do have some articles in English in the magazine's website. If you look for, and that's going to be tough because it's in Portuguese, but
feel free to name some resources in Portuguese in case some of our listeners do speak Portuguese.
Okay, wonderful. So you can Google Revista Questão de Ciência, which translates in English as Question of Science magazine. It's the same name of the institute because, yes, we are that original. And you can also Google IQC. That's easier because that's the website for the institute, and it will lead you to the magazine. And then at the magazine's website, you can find some articles in English. I also write for The Skeptic magazine in the UK, so that's easier. And I write for Medscape as well. So I think this is all you can find in English about me. The rest will be in Portuguese, but if any Portuguese-speaking people is listening to us, I write for the O Globo. It's a Brazilian national newspaper. I write a weekly column for O Globo, and I have two radio shows at CBN radio station that go on air Tuesday morning and Thursday afternoon. They are called The Hour of Science, and I've been trying not to speak about COVID anymore, and I'm trying to bring different scientific topics, but it's difficult because people still have many questions about COVID, but I hope that in time we will be able to discuss other scientific topics as well.
I can certainly endorse The Skeptic magazine. It's really excellent. Not to be confused with Michael Shermer's Skeptic magazine from the US. This is the UK Skeptic magazine. It's at skeptic.org.uk. And what were the three letters for your institute again that people can Google?
IQC.
IQC, not to be confused with HCQ, which is hydroxychloroquine.
Or ICQ, the old messaging app from
yes,
the
I
late
loved
90s.
ICQ. Oh,
we get that a lot. ICQ, yes.
I loved ICQ, the little flowers. Well,
Jonathan, you are not old enough for ICQ.
Oh, I am. I was an avid user of ICQ.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes, that was my thing. I was never into AOL. I just didn't like the AOL interface, I guess. But ICQ was amazing. All my friends were there. ICQ was great. I miss ICQ. The simpler days of social media.
Yeah, and I think we didn't have as many haters back
No,
did we?
We just had our friends on ICQ, and you changed your flower depending if you were in Do Not Disturb mode or invisible or online, and it was just fun. Well, Natalia, this was also fun. Thank you once again, and we'll see you out there.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Chris. And I hope everyone enjoys learning a little bit about Brazil.
And that's the end of our show this month. Our theme music is Fall of the Ocean Queen by Joseph Hackle. Our illustrator is Luke Ouellette. If you want to support the show, find us on Patreon. All of our patrons get a bonus segment each month called Digressions. We're on Facebook and Instagram, and you can find Chris and me on Twitter as well. Our website is bodyofevidence.ca. The Body of Evidence is not affiliated with the McGill Office for Science and Society and is a production of 1254-0851 Canada Inc. And when trying to decide if a study is good or not, remember the Body of Evidence creed.
A study in mice is not a study in people.
Coincidences are easy. Proving causation is hard.
Scientific studies are like movies. Some are just bad.
We can't stop at a single study. We have to look at the
body of evidence.